Thanks, Riley. Next slide, please, Tiffany. Okay, so as Riley mentioned, there was a conversation and has been the discussion about aligning this project and confirming that it aligns with the state rail plan and specifically the opportunities for funding through the FRA's Corridor ID program with an emphasis on inner city rail. And as we talked, many times we've been out in the community and the opportunities that we've had through the open houses and the review of this project over time, the real couple of things are differentiators of inner city service when compared to some more frequent local service or light rail service is one of the options that had come out of previous work and had been looked at in this corridor. And those are all things that are focused on the idea that the service is here not only to serve the local community and provide connections between Watsonville and Santa Cruz, but also connecting and having the ability to interline in the future with the main line through Pajaro and provide connections from Santa Cruz, say on a one-seat ride to other cities in the region outside or beyond Watsonville by the train continuing on to those alignments. And these are important considerations because in the FRA's evaluation of a project and going through it, there are different things that they're looking at as well too to understand the operation and the cost of a project a little differently from what the Federal Transit Administration doing in something that's running much more frequently throughout the day with more stops along the corridor. So in the discussion tonight, what we'd like to talk to you about is some of the characteristics of the project that are being evaluated to demonstrate how it would align with the inner city program and that funding eligibility. And then we're also going to talk about where we are with the alignment based on a lot of the input that we've heard from many of you through the last couple milestones of public engagement and the work that's underway currently to resolve and address some of the areas where we have some conflicts and some things that have to be resolved with community support for the definition of the project. So I'm going to start that conversation this evening with potential station locations. So this is an exhibit that we have talked about previously as a part of our public meetings in terms of station locations that were identified as a part of the previous work that had been evaluated, as well as some interest that came from public conversation about other locations where there might be an interest in having stations that might not be serving daily needs in terms of travel through the corridor, but serving locations like such as some of the beach access areas that would be seasonal or during, say, weekend or other times of the year that aren't traditional travel times for people, say, going to to work or using it to go to school and other opportunities. So this is the list that we started that conversation with. If you could go to the next slide, Tiffany. In the conversation of these stations, as we look at inner city service, we're focused, as we've talked before, on understanding ridership by the various station locations in terms of the stations that are going to provide useful utility to the system and attract riders to it. We're also looking at the rail operations and the safety of those locations and what's served, as well as the access to those sites, be it for local residents who can walk or bicycle to a station or use local bus service to connect and or park and ride or get dropped off at a station by another mode. And these are all important considerations in addition to just the engineering feasibility of those sites and what the adjacent uses are, because it's all these pieces of the puzzle that determine the usefulness of a station to people in the area, and a station being accessible, being safe, and those sorts of things are an important consideration that people make in their decision to ride the train, say, as opposed to driving or taking another mode for their travel in the area. Next slide, please. So as we've gone through this conversation and we've been updating data in the regional travel model to look at the characteristics of the various station locations for ridership and understanding the changes that have occurred in travel volumes as well as visitor activity and regular travel for work and school and those sorts of things in the model. We've gone through and prioritized the stations to a list that we believe is the appropriate starting point for evaluating the trade-offs in the various station locations and fine-tuning this list to a list that's reasonably sized for the length of the system. The stops are frequent enough to serve important areas and connections for people to get on and off the system, depending on where they want to travel within Santa Cruz County or outside, but not being so frequent that it slows down the travel time, because the travel time along a corridor like this is ultimately one of the biggest considerations that people make, and the reliability of that travel time in terms of how they're going to choose to travel from one area to another. And as we've gone through this and looked at it, we looked at these station locations from two different perspectives. One is looking at what traditional modeling data tells us about travel within the corridor, where people are going, what time of day they're traveling, and those sorts of things, and what the purpose of their trip is. And from that, we've identified what you see in the middle column here, which is a high, medium, low in a qualitative assessment of those stations based on the data that we have in terms of their propensity for attracting and having a strong ridership as a part of the project. The second column is a column where we did a little different analysis, because what we looked at is the other types of activities that are in this area that are not traditional generators from a travel model perspective of what we would call commuter trips or work or school trips. But they're the trips that would occur as a result of the number of special activities and the tourism that occurs within Watsonville and Santa Cruz. So for example, in the area of the boardwalk in that area had 3 million visitors last year. That's a substantial number. And so those numbers get evaluated a little differently within a model than we look at work and school trips that are regular daily trips that are being taken by the same people typically day in and day out. And we evaluated both of those and ranked them again high, medium, and low in terms of their propensity for attracting riders in those areas. So with that, we have taken the list of stations and identified what we believe would be the seven reasonable stops between Watsonville as one end of the line and Santa Cruz at the other, with a distribution based on our understanding of the land use, the connectivity to those stations, the other things we talked about on the previous slide, as well as the propensity for attracting riders. And that's what's represented in this table here. Understanding that, for example, in Santa Cruz, as we look at two different alternatives for the end of the line, one being the historic depot, the other one being natural bridges, we wouldn't have both of those stations. But as we look at testing alternatives, either one of those would be considered at the end of the line in that location. At the other end of the line in Watsonville, we would be looking at the end of the line being essentially Pajaro Station. Again, in the future, it's with the intent that a train could continue beyond there. But one of the things that we don't have a lot of data on yet at this point is information from other sources about what the forecasts are for opportunities for connection in Pajaro Station to connect to other elements of the state rail plan. And that's part of the consideration. So this is the list of stations that we've identified as the starting point, and we're doing the ridership evaluation on, with the understanding that how each of these stations fare may help us determine stations that we might add or that we might shift or change to a different location to serve that area, depending on what the model tells us about the connectivity and the benefits of those locations in the system. If you could go to the next slide, please. So, a key part of this, as I mentioned, is really understanding the travel times. And the end-to-end time is what we take into consideration. And when we look at this evaluation, if you think about this comparing to if you were to drive yourself or take another mode and how during the times of the day that trip can vary considerably depending on the amount of traffic and the direction that you're going and what your ultimate destination is. The advantage that the train provides is the ability to have a reliable travel time throughout the day. And so we want to make sure that that time is competitive with the other options that you would have. When we look at the line today from Watsonville or Pajaro Station to Santa Cruz to Natural Bridges, and we look at the list of stations that I just reviewed as that initial list of the stations that demonstrate good propensity for ridership along the line, we've evaluated and looked at this from the perspective of timing that it would take 40 to 45 minutes for a train to make that entire trip from Pajaro to Natural Bridges and to make those stops along the way. The stops are an important part of this conversation because each time we add a stop to the line or we take one out, it has the impact of about 2 minutes on travel time. So if we were to take the number of stations that we have identified right now on the previous list and we were to just say double that number, that could add another 20 minutes to the travel. And if you have the choice to drive or other ways to travel and you looked at this trip, you might look at the trip differently in terms of an alternative or desirable alternative if you know the trip is going to take you 60 minutes versus take you an hour. And I'm sorry, 40 minutes. So 60 minutes versus 40 minutes. So each time we look at this, it's from the perspective of if we're going to add stations, it's going to slow the train down. It's going to be a longer trip. It won't be as desirable to people. Yet on the flip side, we want to make sure that in having a competitive travel time, we're also connecting with the points that provide the strong propensity for ridership and the opportunity to bring passengers on to the train, particularly those people who also have options in terms of the ways that they travel along the corridor. Next slide. We've talked to you previously on several occasions about the vehicle and conversations about inner city versus other types of rolling stock or train equipment, as we refer to. This is the multiple unit that we have talked about previously that there's been a lot of interest in because it does meet the goal of being a zero emissions vehicle. In this case, it's hydrogen. And the train that's in the upper part of the picture there is actually the vehicle that is currently being tested and certified to begin operation in San Bernardino. As a part of the regular rail service that operates around the corridor that goes to Redlands from downtown San Bernardino. That the train has been given the name FLIRT. I will tell you that we have all tried to remember what FLIRT stands for. It's a little bit of an odd acronym that they came up for, but I want to say that it's a flexible, local, innovative regional transit. Is the term that they came up with. And this is actually equipment that has also been purchased by the state of California to begin putting into service in some different areas around the state once it's been certified and begins operation in San Bernardino. The thing about a multiple unit that's unique is that each end of the train is basically a cab. So it can go either direction without needing to turn around. And in the middle is where the motive units are that provide the energy to the operation of the train. And depending on the demand of a system or the length of the system, the train can be designed and modified in length to meet different characteristics. So the photo that's in the bottom is actually the same equipment that's being built by that manufacturer to be going into operation later in Dallas, Texas. Texans need some things, I guess, that are bigger. And so the train is quite a bit longer than what San Bernardino and others are planning to operate. But again, it's to meet their needs of having something, again, that's zero emissions and that provides flexibility in terms of the size of the train and the design of it for the operation that it's being put into. But I think in the next few weeks, actually here, we'll be hearing a lot about the certification of that train as it gets approved for operation in San Bernardino. Next slide. Again, just kind of an update on the vehicle itself and the conversations that we've had. It is with the intent of having level boarding, which is always ideal, particularly for people traveling with bikes or mobility devices. It also makes the boarding and alighting of the train quicker because people aren't needing to stop and pause for a step and whatnot. As we talked about, it is hydrogen and powered, and so it provides that zero emissions. And there are also a number of different amenities that can be accommodated on board depending on the trip length and the way that the service is going to be used. And so in this case, when you think about traveling along this corridor, it's the opportunity, for example, to have bikes on the train if that's something that's desirable to people, so that if you don't want to leave it at a station, there's different things that we can do with the configuration of it to really meet the needs of the community and what people want as a part of that travel opportunity. Next slide. In terms of station design, and just as kind of a reminder before we step into the conversation about the alignments, these are the basic characteristics in terms of dimensions of the stations that will need to be necessary to accommodate this service. The length is typically generated by understanding the length of the equipment that would be using that. The width of the platform varies, whether it's the side or the center, in terms of certain characteristics that the platform also has to address for ADA to ensure that there's a safe area adjacent to the edge of the platform that can be basically identified with truncated domes to keep people away from the edge, and yet ample space within the platform itself for people with mobility devices and other needs to be able to travel safely back and forth across the platform with others who are using it at the same time. Ultimately, the height of the platform is determined by the selection of the vehicle. Some of that is also dictated by other equipment that might share a corridor. And so that's a consideration we have to work to dovetail and make sure is consistent with what's in the other services in the state rail plan. And then finally is making sure that the stations provide shade and other basic safety and security features for the benefit and the safety of passengers as they're traveling the corridor. Next slide. Depending on the locations and what we know about the travel characteristics to and from those stations, as well as the adjacent use, the adjacent land use, and how people might be accessing them, these are some of the other elements that might be provided at any or all of the locations, depending again on what the community wants to have provided in terms of basic amenities, but also the things that might be appropriate given specific locations. So for example, a station that's in a downtown area that doesn't need to have its own parking and actually is an alternative for parking for people who are traveling into downtown may not have parking immediately adjacent to it. Another station that's a little further out where people are more inclined to drive to the station in order to get access to go into downtown or to travel further in the state may have parking that's provided for a part of it. And those are characteristics, again, that are partially generated by not only you, the community's input to the project, but also what we know about the propensity for the ridership to the various locations. Next slide. So with that, I would like to turn this over to Chris O'Gara, who's our lead engineer.